We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Welcome back to The Strike Zone, powered by Graybar on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Good to be with you guys. Welcome in to Thursday night on KMOX. This time tomorrow night, we'll be getting ready for the first pitch over at Busch Stadium between the Cardinals and the Padres. And, man, the Padres are in such a bad state right now. Now, they won today. So, you know, that definitely puts them in a little bit better place coming in. They had a hard time against San Fran. But, I mean, they've also been playing San Francisco and L.A. quite a bit here recently. So, you know, and no big surprise, right? You play a lot of games in your division down the stretch, but yeah, it's been a little rough for the Padres, and it's more than just the last couple of weeks. I mean, they've now I think they're now like 11-21 in their last 32 games. Now they did win the last two in San Francisco, and you know, I'm sure that sets them up a little bit better coming into this weekend, but. You know, we talk about how the Cardinals have been scrambling for pitching all season long, and they have, man. I mean, look, we've seen it. You know, finally, you know, picking up someone like Wade LeBlanc and then having J-Hap and John Lester help stabilize things. I mean, it's been a season-long search for that pitching help. And, you know, the fact that you've started to get it is part of what helped settle things down. But, you know, this whole situation, you know, I mean, like Adam Wainwright's got 190 innings pitched, and then Kwon-Young Kim is next at 100. You know, I mean, you know, so as much as people want to feel bad for the Padres and all the pitching that they've struggled with, I mean, look, the Cardinals have dealt with that all season long too. They're just on the other side of it, and you know that is, or they're, I mean, I don't want to say they're on the other side of it, but they're in a better place on that at the moment than the Padres are. But coming into the weekend, looking at the pitching matchups, you've got Miles Mikolas for the Cardinals coming up tomorrow. And look, Miles hasn't been great since coming back. He's not, you know, it's not unexpected. I mean, you know, somebody that hasn't really pitched in 18 months, you know, not quite 2 years, but, you know, almost. It's almost 2 years that you didn't really have competitive game action. It's understandable that you're going to be bumpy, that you're going to be, you know, not as precise, especially when you're a command guy. But you get Miles Mikolas against Vince Velasquez. And the Padres just picked up Velasquez the other day, and he'd been released by the Phillies. Just kind of the same type of move that the Cardinals had to make earlier with Happ and Lester and LeBlanc. It's just happening a little bit later for the Padres here. So you've got that matchup on Friday. Saturday, you've got great name value there. Adam Wainwright, of course, has been phenomenal. Yu Darvish has the name value, but Yu Darvish has been getting hit, and you know, I don't, you know, he's talented, right? So you know that at any given point, you know, he could put it together and have a big game. But he had a 7.36 ERA in July. He had a 6.32 in August. And he's got a 9.95 ERA in three starts so far in September. So, needless to say, Darvish has been getting knocked around. And you've got that matchup, he and Adam Wainwright on Saturday. And then on Sunday, it's going to be J-Hap and Jake Arrieta. And, of course, Arrieta is the Padres, again, Padres version of what the Cardinals have gotten out of Lester and Happ, except he hasn't delivered that. Arrieta's made three starts for the Padres. He's given up now, what is it, 11 earned runs in, I think it's 12 innings. Yeah, 11 earned runs in 12 innings since joining the Padres. So it's going to be an interesting weekend, and we're going to break all of that down coming up in a couple of minutes with Scott Miller, Valley Sports San Diego, MLB Network Radio. He'll be joining us to talk just kind of where things are with the Padres now, and their offense has been struggling too, just to get the better sense of somebody that sees them on a day-to-day basis. And then at 7:30, Lance Berkman, back to the 2011 team and the 10th anniversary celebration this weekend. So we got a busy 7 o'clock hour. We'll bring in Scott Miller next here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Strike Zone, powered by Graybar on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Great to be back with you on a Thursday night. Conversation with Lance Berkman coming up just after 7:30. He and, of course, all the guys from 2011 back in town this weekend as they celebrate the 10th anniversary of the 2011 World Series Championship. So we'll get to Lance Berkman in a little bit. Very happy to have Scott Miller with me, a longtime baseball columnist. You can catch him on MLB Network Radio, on Bally Sports San Diego. You should have already read his book, the book that he wrote with Bob Tewksbury, 90% Mental. And if you haven't, well, now you know to go check it out. You'll find Scott on Twitter, at Scott Miller BBL. Scott, how you doing, man? How's the season been treating you?
So far, so good, Kevin. It's, now we're getting down to the fun time, right? Now we forget about all that stuff about it's a marathon. Now the sprint is on, isn't it? I mean, it's just on the side, let alone on the field, but on the sidelines, as you and I watch the games, I don't know about you, but I'm assuming you're like me. You're locked in even a little bit more than earlier in the summer, and it's like every night it's like putting a puzzle together, it looks like the most of the division races are decided, but these wild card races in both American and National League, you're watching, I'm sure, in St. Louis, the Cardinals game, you're checking on the Reds, you're checking on the Padres, and I'm based, as you know, in San Diego, same thing. I'm looking at how are those National League Central teams doing, because the Padres certainly have gone from a lock to be in the playoffs to trying to play their way out of it.
Yeah, it's been a fascinating thing to watch from a distance, Scott, and it's obviously one of the reasons we wanted to get your perspective on this, being that you're in San Diego. And I mean, from a distance, it seems that it's as simple as, well, a lot of people are hurt, and they've lost guys here and there and certainly had damage done to their rotation. Look, the Cardinals know all about that. They've had their share of scrambling for pitching this year too, which probably explains why they both have almost identical records now. It just seems like, maybe it's just hitting the Padres later in the year? Is that what's happening?
It's part of it, but, they've gone through a skid where they lost like 13 of 15, 15 of 20. I mean, they've still got enough talent that even given a handful of injuries, they ought to be a lot better than they are. It's mystifying. I mean, you're right. The injuries have played a factor in it. And right now, the most recent stuff, they're sucking air on their starting pitching. Blake Snell pulled an adductor muscle the other day, and he's on the injured list right now. And Chris Paddock went down with a sore arm, and he's on the injured list. But even going back to the trade deadline, there were some talk that they needed to acquire some pitching, and I know in your area, the Cardinals, I mean, getting a back end of his career, John Lester and J.A. Happ, might not have been as sexy as the Dodgers getting Max Scherzer, but that's the kind of stuff the Padres needed to make it get at least like one of those type of guys. They didn't end up getting anybody. And, then they were hit with some injuries. And, Yu Darvish in April, May, and June was absolutely terrific. But starting in late June, Darvish is slumped. He's healthy. He's just not pitching well. And this has been going on since late June. And, so they've got pitching issues. Fernando Tatis Jr. went to the outfield for a while because he popped that left shoulder of his. If you're keeping score at home, Kevin, it's popped out five times beginning in spring training. It's popped out, and they pop it back in. And there's talk he's probably going to have surgery at the end of the year. But they're trying to nursemaid him along, and so they moved him out to the outfield, and then he didn't hit at all out there. He wasn't playing with joy. It looked like he didn't want to be out there. And then Jay Cronenworth suffered a broken finger when he was hit by a pitch, so they just moved Tatis back to shortstop a couple days ago. And the Tatis you're going to get in St. Louis after going through one of the worst slumps of his career the previous 3 or 4 weeks, he's reached base 8 out of 10 times now, his last 10 times, including today in San Francisco.
You know, that move to the outfield never made sense to me, Scott. I understand that, you know, the injury keeps happening, but, I mean, putting somebody in an unnatural position where they're not used to dealing with things and where you know, it's not like you don't dive in the outfield. I mean, like, that's right. Got to be the biggest concern is diving or sliding. I thought that was very strange.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're doing what they can to kind of put bubble wrap around him and keep him on the field. But I agree, you know, the thinking was, you know, at shortstop, it's a higher risk position because maybe you dive more there than you do in the outfield. And I think that, to me, they overthought that whole thing quite a bit, because the magic of Fernando Tatis Jr. is, it's almost, you know, you compare it to basketball, like Magic Johnson or Larry Bird. The magic of Fernando Tatis Jr. is you want him to get as many touches as possible, touches of the ball, so to speak, in a different sport, right? You want him at the plate as often as you can. In the infield, you know, you want him handling the balls at shortstop. Part of it is it energizes him and energizes the team, and he plays with adrenaline and he plays with joy. And by putting him out right field and a couple games in center field, you basically, you're protecting his shoulder as best you can, but you're also moving him from having X number of touches, so to speak, in a game. In other words, you're just putting him out to pasture, and he can't affect a game out there as much as when he's playing shortstop.
Scott, what's going on with the rest of the lineup? I know I've been following this. It seems like almost nobody's hitting in the month of September. And really, I looked at it bigger picture. Like, Manny Machado's had a good year. Cronenworth was having a good year before he got hurt. But it looked like a lot of the other guys were just below expectation. Not terrible, but below what the team had hoped that they were going to be.
Yeah, and that's accurate. And that's why I hedged a little bit, Kevin, when you mentioned all the injuries. And you're exactly right. I mean, that's part of it. But where I hedged was, you know, as you bring up the offensive numbers and the disappointing seasons, you know, some of that, a lot of that is not, that has nothing to do with the injuries. I mean, this is a team that you would think would be, you know, pounding the ball. Mm-hmm. You know, Eric Hosmer's been disappointing and streaky, and he doesn't have much power anymore. Machado's, as you said, his numbers overall are pretty good. You know, tie him in with the injuries. He's been on the field, but, you know, they're being really secretive about this, but he tweaked his left shoulder back in April during a game against the Dodgers. It was the first series of the year between the Padres and Dodgers. And, you know, that was the series. All three games were, like, suitable for framing. It was great stuff, great theater. Yeah. And Machado, during a slide, he tweaked his shoulder. And they've been secretive, but, you know, people around the team in generalities will admit, you know, he hasn't been right all year. So what he's done, and he's still a magician defensively. So, you know, Machado's had a really good year. But, like I say, even Tatis, you know, over most of the last month, you know, he went into the tank. Tommy Pham has had a really hard time getting any consistency this year. He's had, you know, all about his keratoconus, the eye condition he has. And he, I talked to him at length last homestand, and he's that condition's changed a little bit on him, thus needing causing him to need a couple extra, like, to change some contact lens stuff. He it's been a summer where he's been battling, you know, when I talked to him last homestand, you know, he's had to order about 9 or 10 different contacts. He hasn't quite been able to get them right. And he felt like when I last homestand, he had seen his specialist again, and he felt like, okay, I think I finally got him right. But, you know, he's been very frustrated with his inconsistency, and, you know, but bottom line, the last 2 or 3 months, they've had trouble scoring runs, and you look on paper at this lineup, and they should.
No, that's interesting. It's, you know, when I look at the numbers, I mean, they and the Cardinals have almost identical OPSs this year. They're both hitting right around 240 as a team, 713 mm-hmm. for the Cardinals, 719 for the Padres. If you had told me that that was going to be the case before the year, I would have been like, well, that means the Cardinals are having a phenomenal year if they have the same numbers as the Padres. But, you know, they've had their own struggles. Well, their offense is kind of clicking later in the year now. And that's what I want to close on, Scott, is kind of your impression of, you know, from a distance, what's going on with the Cardinals right now. I mean, obviously, you know, they've got the big boys in the lineup hitting. You know, Goldschmidt's been really good for 2.5 months, and Tyler O'Neill's had a breakout year, and they're starting to have a bunch of guys finally hitting at the same time, as opposed to some hitting and others not. And I think that's led to some consistency, or a little more consistency here lately, even with all the pitching questions that they've had. What's your impression of this team from a distance, and, you know, kind of compared to what your preseason expectations were?
Yeah, you know, I like the Cardinals a lot. Obviously, right now, you're right. Some hitters have gotten hot right at the perfect time because, you know, I looked, you know, the last 10 games, you know, Cardinals are the only team trending in the right direction in this wild card race, right?
Yeah.
And they won 7 out of 10. The Reds have lost 7 out of 10. The Padres have lost 6 out of 10. You know, the Cardinals are a team I trust more than other teams simply because their baseball operations department, the choices they make, the way they play the game, even when they're underperforming. With the Cardinals, and maybe it's not always the case, but when they're underperforming, I feel like, well, they're going to figure it out eventually. They'll play better than they are right now, and that's not always the case. A lot of other teams, I'm like, well, they stink, you know. With the Cardinals, like, well, I have that trust that they'll be better. I mean, Tommy Edmond, I mean, what a find he was a few years ago. I mean, yeah. You know, the draft pick in, what, 2016, and he's the kind of guy to me that makes teams go. I mean, offensively, defensively, they're so fun to watch defensively with Goldie at first and Arenado at third. You know, I love the acquisition of Arenado. Back to your question, preseason expectations. I thought they were going to be pretty good. I loved the Arenado acquisition. I thought that was just perfect. Obviously, in the outfield, you know, they were depending on some guys that maybe were more unproven, but hopeful they were going to come along. But, you know, Goldschmidt, Arenado, you know, Edmund, I looked at this preseason and I thought, you know, this team's going to be competitive. They're going to be pretty good. I don't know if I would have. I mean, I thought they'd challenge for a postseason spot just like they are now. I mean, I thought maybe they'd be a little closer to first with this crew. I mean, Milwaukee's had a phenomenal season. I would have expected the NL Central to be more bunched up toward the top.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have expected the Brewers to have that big of a lead. But where the Cardinals are playing now is kind of where I figured they'd be. You know, they're playing this well.
Yeah, that's about right. They may end up being right around where expectations were after all of the bumps in the road, depending on how these last two weeks plus the 3 days this weekend end up getting themselves sorted out. Scott, thank you for jumping on. We appreciate it. I'm looking forward to the series. I know I mean, these are all basically playoff series right now. You know, a bunch of these teams playing each other. The Mets and Phillies playing this weekend. The Reds have the Dodgers this weekend. So happy scoreboard watching, and hopefully we'll maybe talk to you again around playoff time and see how this all sorts out.
You as well. I'm, as you know, a total baseball guy, but everything you just said, and then on Saturdays at this time of year, you throw in the occasional college football game. This is as good a time of year as there is.
I'm right there with you, my friend, right there with you. You guys, you have a great night. We'll talk to you soon, Scott.
You too, Kevin. Thank you.
You got it. Scott Miller, he's with Bally Sports San Diego. You'll catch him on MLB Network Radio as well. And definitely check out his book. He wrote it with Bob Tewksbury. It's about the mental side of the game. 90% Mental is the name of the book. Highly recommend. It's fantastic stuff. All right, stick around. Speaking of fantastic stuff, conversation with Lance Berkman about the 2011 championship season coming up next here on KMOX.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Sunday night, the Chiefs are in Baltimore to take on the Ravens, and you can hear the game here.
Touchdown, Kansas City!
Pre-game at 6, kickoff 7:20 on your voice of Chiefs football, KMOX.
All right, you're back in on KMOX. Obviously, we're continuing to get you ready for the Cardinals and the Padres, but also get ready for the weekend as we celebrate the 10th anniversary of the 2011 World Series Championship team. And I talked to Chris Carpenter earlier today. We had that interview last hour. Caught up with Lance Berkman yesterday to just, again, do some, just kind of walk down memory lane from his perspective as the new guy in town in 2011, what it was like joining the team, making the run, and all of that. And I started off by asking him if he could believe that it's actually been 10 years since all of that went down.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it just vanished in like smoke, you know. In fact, I was laying in bed thinking about that. I was like, man, how did that happen? And then I was like, all right, well, after 11, I played 2 more years and then coached 4 in high school and took a year off and then coached last year. And so, I mean, when you stop to think about it, you know, you can account for the time, but it surely feels like it went by in a hurry.
You know, it was, in all honesty, Lance, too, one of the most incredible years just to cover, right? I mean, it was not a simple, smooth ride. I mean, I talked to a couple of guys, talked to John Jay and Jason Mott recently about that. It just, you know, it wasn't always like, hey, we're awesome, we're going to go win the World Series, but you guys had to know you were good coming in, man. I mean, you knew what you were stepping into with a loaded team with veterans like Albert and Yachty and Chris Carpenter and obviously Waino now in his fifth year. I mean, you knew you were coming into a good spot. How did that season progress from your viewpoint?
Well, when we were headed to spring training, I thought the best team in baseball on paper. And, you know, then, of course, the big blow at that time was when Waino went out with his Tommy John. And so at that point, I remember thinking, well, that, you know, that's really a huge blow and one that I'm, you know, not a lot of teams can overcome that kind of a loss. But I felt like we still had a very solid team. And, of course, you know, the Cardinals are an organization that are committed to winning. So I figured that, you know, the front office would do something along the way to help us out, maybe to try to take up the slack if we could. And so, you know, then as the year progressed, for one reason or another, it felt like the team never got on, you know, to where we were hitting on all cylinders. I don't know if it was just because there were some new faces in there and we didn't gel as quickly as we thought we were going to. But, you know, you're exactly right in your assessment that it was less than a smooth ride. I think it wasn't until after the trade deadline, you know, and sort of getting into that latter part of August that things started to click for us.
Where were you guys, like, just from a, you know, just a morale standpoint near the end of August? Because when we looked at that, you know, there was a point there, I think it was like August 24th or 5th, somewhere in there, where you had lost 3 to the Dodgers, 4 games over 500, but way behind Atlanta. And I know a lot of people started talking about, you know, more kids playing and all that. But that's when it turned, right? It was right around that series with Pittsburgh and then Milwaukee. You guys won like 6 out of 7 games. And from that point, it was happy flight, rally squirrel, and the rest of the Cinderella story.
Yes. I mean, I could be wrong, but my recollection is, you know, we had gotten swept by the Dodgers, which I mean, we kind of had the low point of the season, and then very quickly thereafter, some of the best baseball that we had played all year, which is kind of a weird thing. Of course, you know, there's the famous meeting, the clubhouse. They close the clubhouse, and that's when Carp, you know, really led our meeting, and we just kind of agreed as a group that no matter what happened the rest of the year, that we were going to continue to be as professional as possible, come to the park every day, try to do our job. And the Braves that were the team that we were chasing the wild card, they were 10 games up at that point. And we had it was fortuitous scheduling for us because we had a four-game series with them right after we got swept by the Dodgers. And we turned around and swept the Braves. So we went from 10 games back to 6 games back, you know, in 4 days. And that, to me, was the springboard moment. And there was a couple of games in there that, you know, that we had won, I think, you know, really late, where we'd made a comeback and won late. And then we just capitalized on that momentum as we headed into September. And then the other big series I remember is we had, I think, a 4-game series in Philadelphia. And, of course, at that time, they were considered the best team in baseball. And we had to go into Philly, and we won 3 out of 4. And so that's kind of when we knew we were good.
Well, that part of the year was pretty amazing. And then you get to the postseason part, Lance. And, I mean, it, at every point, it felt like the story was growing, right? I mean, you had the big series against Philly, the Carpenter-Holiday game and all of that stuff. And then it felt like the Milwaukee series got overlooked a little bit. The NLCS got overlooked a little bit because then the World Series was just so spectacular. I think to this day still, Lance, the most entertaining World Series I can remember.
Well, for sure. I mean, that whole playoff run was great. And, you know, I felt like at that point, like I told you at the beginning, you know, going into the season, I felt like we were the best team in baseball. And then going into the playoffs, I felt that it kind of came full circle that we were the best team in baseball. So, you know, we expected to win against Philadelphia. We certainly expected to win against the Brewers, which we dispatched them fairly handily. And then, of course, heading into the World Series. And that matchup was great because you had a Rangers team that had a ton of postseason experience, a lot of veteran guys, so they had a really good team as well. And, you know, it was just a kind of a heavyweight slugfest back and forth.
You know, it's interesting. You know, Game 6 was easily the most entertaining game I've ever seen. I was, you know, our studio doing pre and post, Lance, is like right behind home plate, right behind the green seat. So if you go back in there by the umpire's room, we were right there. So we're kind of like running back and forth in the late innings because the score kept changing. I saw the champagne going back and forth between clubhouses as the lead switch. You guys got behind and then tied it up and it went back the other way. And I watched all this happen and Rangers families going back and forth. And then, obviously, we all know how it ended with some of the most intense and exciting moments that I can think of. We think of the David Freese moments, and I think rightfully so, but we shouldn't forget the Lance Berkman moment. You had yourself a moment in the top, in the bottom of the 10th inning as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's easy to focus on some of those kind of spotlight-type at-bats, but the overriding thing for me was just how well the whole team played and came through. I mean, you can't do it by yourself or even one or two guys. It takes 25 guys to win in a situation like that. And I mean, you know, the real unsung contributions are guys like John Jay and Daniel Descalzo that started out with 2 hits to lead off that inning. And then, of course, Kyle Loesch comes off the bench and lays down a bunt, which sounds easy, but it's really not. It's not easy to do. And then, you know, even Terrio putting the ball in play and getting one run home and setting us up. So, you know, Alan Craig hit a big homer that cut the lead from 3 runs down to 2, I believe, in either the 7th or 8th inning of that game, that really kind of gave us some hope before the Freeze triple. And so, I mean, there are just so many moments and pitching performances, too. You know, like a Jake Westbrook comes in and gets 3 outs after we had tied it the second time, just kind of a ho-hum inning, but definitely shut the door there, and then Freeze hits the walk-off. So, I mean, there are so many guys that you could point to and say, without that contribution, we don't win, and that was the beauty of that team. There was just up and down the lineup, and all throughout the pitching staff, you know, we got great performances.
Yeah, I think you guys used almost every player on the roster in some form. It might have been one, maybe two guys that didn't get into that game. And you mentioned Loesch. I mean, Edwin Jackson had a pinch hit appearance in that game. You unloaded on the pen. I'm glad you brought up Jake Westbrook too, because if you think about it, you're going to be thinking, okay, it's the 11th inning. Who's going to go out there after all that? And you would think, okay, Dottel or Mott or Lynn at that time. But those guys had already been in that game. They had already had to do their part. And then here you are with a starter coming in the back end of a game. I was pretty fantastic. And by the way, a pretty big acquisition in that season too in Westbrook.
Well, and not only that, but Jake and that whole deal sort of illustrates the spirit of the team, probably the best of any story I could tell. You know, Jake had been a starter for us all year, and even going back to the year before when he had been traded for, You know, he had come from the Indians, and he was like the man over there. You know, he was kind of their ace, and he had pitched really well for us. And then most people don't remember this, but he got left off the playoff roster the first two rounds. So he wasn't even on the roster in the division series or in the LCS. And they added him for the World Series. And a lot of guys would have been sulking, you know, or pouting and like, oh, woe is me. I was a starter, and now I'm not even on the roster. And then when it gets added to the roster, he doesn't get a chance to start. They put him in the bullpen, which is a role that he hadn't pitched in I don't know how long. But Jake was willing to do whatever it took for the team. He's a great teammate, you know, kind of embodied the spirit of that team and was ready to do his job when he was called on. I think he only had maybe one appearance in that World Series, but it happened to be like the biggest inning that he could have pitched. And mm-hmm. he went out there and just mowed him down. And so, you know, I think I use that with the teams that I coach a lot, just to illustrate staying ready, staying engaged, you know, being willing to take on a secondary role for the good of the team, and then just, you know, coming through like he did. It's as much a testament to his character and to his mental makeup, and that's a big reason. There was a lot of guys like that on that team. That's a big reason we won.
You know, Lance, when we can look at it now, you know, 10 years removed, and we can kind of fixate or at least focus a little bit on what we knew about the team's personality and how you guys all had, you know, something different to bring to the table. What was that like early for you? I mean, you were the guy, you know, or at least one of those, the killer bees in Houston. You went from a clubhouse where you had been there forever. You know, you were one of the not just a veteran player, but obviously one of the big voices. And then you come into a new place that has a lot of already big voices in guys like Albert and Chris Carpenter and all that. What was it like watching the team come together? Because you did have a lot of different types of personalities in that room.
Well, that whole year, even though I hadn't played in St. Louis before, it was like I'd been there for a decade. I mean, it just, that group of guys was, the chemistry was off the chart. I mean, even from the first day of spring training, we just had a lot of fun being together. I mean, we had so many characters, Gerald Laird, Nick Punto, you know, Ryan Terrio, just guys that it's just fun to come to the ballpark when those guys are there. And I always tell, you know, people ask me about that team all the time. And I was like, it's literally the one team that I ever played on where, you know, you could put everybody's name on a dartboard and throw a dart, and whatever name you hit, you could go on a 2-week vacation with them and have a great time. I mean, so there was, you know, we all got along great and just came together well. And, you know, it wasn't always smooth, but I will tell you, and I think everybody that played on that team feels the same way. It really was a joy to come to the ballpark every day.
Well, it sort of looked like that from the outside. And, you know, the last thing I want to get to, Lance, and I haven't brought this up yet, and I kind of feel bad that I'm waiting till the end to bring up Tony La Russa, but obviously, you know, you had gone against him and his teams for a lot of years with Houston and St. Louis going back and forth, especially 04, 05 in the playoffs. I'm sure you had a perception of him before you got to St. Louis. What did it end up being like playing for Tony?
Well, Tony's my favorite manager that I ever played for, you know, for a number of reasons. But playing against him, I wanted to fight him. Like, I told him, I said, you know, from the other side, I would definitely have offered to meet you in the parking lot, you know, just the sunglasses at night and just kind of the stony demeanor at all times. And, you know, from the outside looking in, you don't get him. But when you play for him, you start to understand that, I mean, this guy, all he wants to do is win. He's a great competitor. He creates a sense of urgency with guys that it's hard to do that with big league players. You know, there's a lot of comfort, and, you know, there's a lot of things that big league guys have. Sometimes it's hard to make them play with that sense of urgency that you need, but he just had a way about him where he could do that. Of course, I don't, you know, not that he was perfect in all of his moves, but he rarely, if ever, got outmanaged. So just kind of a total package and really a great personality behind the scenes. You know, he doesn't let anybody see that. You know, on the outside, I'm sure dealing with him from a media standpoint, he kind of has that same monotone sort of stony demeanor. But behind the scenes, he's got a tremendous personality. He's really a bright guy. He's a lot of fun to talk to. And, you know, I just love playing for him.
You know, it's interesting. We always I know I and a couple other guys on the team that covered the team would joke about Tony that there were two Tonys. There was spring training where he was funny and he'd take pot shots at individuals in our group and just have a little fun and, you know, be smart-assy and all that. But then once the season started, it was a lot more business. But You know, you understood it because that's really where you get to him. You'd see him before the game. I don't know if he said this to you guys, but you'd see him in the tunnel before the game. You're like, hey, Tony, how you doing? He'd go, ask me at 11. Ask me at 11.
Yeah, he just, I mean, it's unbelievable. If he had had the physical ability, he'd have been a Hall of Fame player because he definitely had the mental, you know, focus and intensity that you have to have. And it was just, you know, the team will always take on the personality of its manager to a certain degree. I mean, the manager, you know, just kind of rubs off on everybody. And I think the intensity, and I'm speaking not only for the year that I played for him, but also for all the years that we competed against each other. Every Cardinal team that I ever played against just exuded that same intensity, and he's a big reason why. Every day it's like game seven, and he literally managed that way. And at first you're kind of like, no way this guy could be serious, but he is. I mean, that's just, you know, that's how he is, and he's able to maintain it, and it's really great.
Well, we were all excited, Lance, when you were brought into the mix. Obviously, you know, everybody knew coming into the year that it had a chance to be really good. And I think the way that it went made it even more fun to look back on with the big comeback and, you know, the moments in the postseason. And we're really happy that you took a few minutes to talk a bit about all that with us. Thanks so much, man. I hope you're doing well and enjoy the weekend.
All right. Appreciate it, Kevin. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, man. I mean, literally the best guy. I can't, there have been a lot of great people to cover over the years, a lot of great Cardinals, a lot of great Blues. I mean, you know, that's just not to single any, you know, to say that anybody else is less than. I don't know that anybody has the better combination of personality and insight than Lance Berkman. I guess I'll pull a Tony La Russa. At the very least, he's tied for first. All right, we're going to wrap it up. Coming up in just a couple of minutes. We'll tell you what happened in the big leagues here tonight, or at least what's happening now, where there might have been some help or maybe some help for the Cardinals in the wild card standings and all of that. And, of course, we'll set you up for the series against the Padres when we come back here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Strike Zone, powered by Graybar on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, let's finish things up with Building the Future, powered by Graybar. And, well, let's... what we're building toward is this weekend series between the Cardinals and the Padres. And, you know, it's funny, in talking to Scott Miller, kind of made me think of this, but if you had told me at the beginning of the year, you know, April 1st, that on the 17th, 18th, and 19th of September, the Cardinals and Padres would meet in a series that would help decide a playoff spot, I would have been like, boy, the Cardinals must be having a hell of a year. And they're having a hell of a run now, but really a lot of this is the Padres coming back to the pack when they were supposed to be one of the elite teams in the National League. But at this point, you have a great race, and we're looking forward to it. Cardinals have the second wild card spot going into the weekend. The Padres a half game back. The Reds a game back. Phillies three. Mets five games back. So five teams within five games and just a little bit more than 2 weeks left. It's going to be a blast, and looking forward to getting it started tomorrow night with game one of the series. You guys have yourselves a great night tonight. We'll catch you on the pregame show tomorrow night here on KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.